Welcome to the OFX podcast. As promised, we said we were going to break up our episodes where we give you some interviews, and separately we do our what used to be our preamble with Beth and I, so that you'll get to not have such long episodes, shorter ones, easier to take in. So today we have one of our members of Team OFX, a guy we all love, and who's probably one of the most well-liked guys in OCR, and now is becoming one of the most accomplished guys in OCR, one of Canada's best hybrid athletes. Here goes. Austin Azar.
Right in.
Yeah, because like Beth is not here. She is currently on the way to High Rocks.
Ooh, in Chicago.
In Chicago, yes, yes. She's running her first pro wave since her first pro wave, which didn't go so well. So
okay. Nice.
A little bit of redemption.
We're gonna tune in and watch some of the event. I imagine they're gonna do coverage for both the there's the Elite 15 and then they have the Pro Wave after that.
Hopefully
they cover both.
I think they're just doing the men's and women's Elite 15.
Really? Because from what it sounds like, the Pro Wave is gonna be stacked too.
A lot of good people in those Pro Waves. Names that like Colin Stiefer. Who else did I hear was in there? I can't remember. I just remember hearing a bunch of really good names in the Pro Wave. I'm kind of surprised. Well, in a way I'm surprised, in a way I'm not surprised that you're there. Or not there.
Yeah. The week after World's Toughest Mudder?
Dude, Chris would do it.
I think Isaac is gonna be there.
Yeah. But he only did like 90 miles.
Only 90 miles.
Yeah, so he was cutting back. This was a taper week. Or you know, maybe we should do this whole thing. Like, wait, hold on. Very professional. Like your 2023 World's Toughest Mudder champion. Austin Azar. There you go. That's as professional as I get.
Nice.
How are you feeling?
That whole weekend is still kind of sinking in. Still kind of can't believe it. But yeah, I felt pretty wrecked the entire week, to be honest. Pretty just overall fatigued. I'm not too sore. I was sore for a couple of days and like everything feels pretty good. I'm just like overall everything just feels fatigued. But I've been taking it easy, though. I'm like, I've done nothing except go for a couple of walks and did some yoga.
But even your mind, like even your head to go through that, it just takes a while to get it all out and play. Like, I mean, anytime you have a big race, you always got that post-race, not depression, but like that drop. And then to go from one that is so epic. And I did WTM before, not to the extent that you did, but even through what I went through where it was like, for the next week you're kind of weird and a little bit off, and then to the extent you did 105 miles, man, that's got to make you a little loopy.
I was farther than I've ever gone. And finished. My goal was to get through the 24 hours without crashing at the end, because I've gotten through WTM and like was technically a finisher of it, but I was finishing like the 20 to 22 hours and never made it the full 24. Mm-hmm. When I hit 100 miles before, I was completely dead at the end, like completely dead. And like this time I felt good. I was running at the end, trying to get to the finish line to go up for 110, but didn't quite make it there in time.
The one you're talking, it was 2016, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
You went out there and you were battling with Trevor, and for me, this was just getting into OCR at that point, right? I was just learning. So I watched that video. Like that one was one of the ones that convinced me to try WTM.
Oh, no way.
I was watching that and then watching Atkins and Albin chase the doubles and you guys. And so that was the one that got me to go. And I remember sitting there and I remember you at the end, and I'm sure they made it a little more dramatic than it was. I mean, this is TV, this is CBS, but pretty much is like you found the smallest man on the course to carry you around for the last lap.
That was Van Tran.
Was it Van Tran? I didn't know it was Van Tran.
Yeah, it was Van Tran. Well, I might've been dead if it wasn't for him. Cause at like the very last, like 100 meters from the finish, there was a cliff jump.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hobbling up to that cliff jump. I had basically fully crashed. could barely walk, could barely talk. And I'm hobbling up to the cliff. The volunteer there was really worried that I was going to jump off. He's like, you're not going to be able to swim. You're going to drown. But the penalty for the cliff was like 3/4 of a mile around. And I'm like, there's no way I'm doing 3/4 of a mile. So I was about to jump off. And then Van Tran comes up. The volunteer must have convinced him, like, yeah, you got to carry this guy around. And so Van Tran helped and basically like carried me that penalty loop and then right to the finish there at the end.
Well, he's a great guy. I mean, I love watching Van Tran do DECA when he does. He is like the best box overs. That guy just like flies, man.
Oh, yeah. He's so speedy.
He's got great agility. So this year, so most of the year that we've talked and stuff, you've been focusing on like high rocks and doing some hybrid stuff. I wasn't even 100% sure you were going to WTM. And then all of a sudden you win it. And I'm like, were you even training for this? Like, was it even a thought process?
I mean, every year I want to do at least one big ultra. Yeah. It's something that I love doing. And I was planning to do one in August, out west in the Rockies. And then that trip to Europe for work came up and it overlapped with that ultra, so I couldn't do that ultra. And then I wasn't planning, or after last year's World Toughest Mudder didn't go the way I'd hoped it would go, and I always knew I was going to go back and felt like I had unfinished business. And so I was originally thinking to go back to World Toughest next year, but given that I couldn't do that ultra that I wanted to do, I had done basically like a solo Grand Canyon rim to rim ultra adventure on my own. But I was like, I kind of wanted to do an ultra race. So ended up jumping into World's Toughest Mudder and going for that this year.
Good call.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm watching through the night and I was thinking a couple of things and I was watching you do well. I think one of the reasons, and I mean, not being there, but one of the reasons that jumped out to me during the night that you were doing well was because penalty loops were so nasty and you are not inclined to fail very many obstacles. Do you think that made a big difference for you? Like, I don't, because I mean, I know you probably didn't fail very much, but the guys behind you, I'm not quite sure how they would have done. So do you think it played a big part in it?
It was, compared to last year, it was a huge part of it. There were some penalty loops last year that were almost as short as the obstacle itself.
Well, and they were goofy as shit. They were horrible. I thought it was
terrible. Some of them were goofy. Goofy, but there were like some of the goofy ones were exhausting, like that bouncy ball one. But some of them were fairly short, and like some of the like Cargonet ones that take 20, 30 seconds to go across, there was like a 20 or 30 second penalty where, I remember at one point, Mark Gaudette, me and him got to that obstacle at the same time, and I went across it, and then he was ahead of me coming out of the penalty. Yeah. So they definitely fixed up the penalties, but some of them were very, very long. I failed two obstacles, both of them on the same lap. One of them was the grappler and had like at least half a mile, really long penalty for that one. And then the other was one of the rigs near the end that had another, like at least half a mile penalty. Both of them, yeah, really long. And then some of the other penalties look really long as well.
Do you think they're right or was it too much? And the thing I saw, some of them, yeah, go ahead. Do you think they were right or were they too long and too much? Because a lot of them had something to do as well on it.
Yeah, maybe a little bit shorter would have been better, but I do like the longer penalties. I mean, it definitely encourages you to give it everything on the obstacles and try your best to make it through them. But to a point, I think having a penalty that's longer than, you know, like 10 minutes or something like that, that's pretty long.
Yeah. Now 2017, did you go to 2017?
I did as a relay.
Okay.
That's right, they had I think it was Funky Monkey where they had the Arctic Enema and that big loop.
Yeah, and that was like 3/4 of a mile long.
Yeah. So the two penalty loops I did at this one were about that long.
Wow.
Yeah.
So to me, that was, in my mind, the best setup. That one particular penalty might have been a bit much, but the rest of them I thought were pretty good in distance.
Yeah.
I would love.
I mean, for a big obstacle, kind of like that Funky Monkey one, I thought that was okay of a penalty to do one long like that, but something like like the grappler, which you're already at that obstacle for a while to do it. Like sometimes you had to wait your turn because people take three tries for it.
Yeah.
And each try takes a while. Like you throw it, you got to bring it back, coil it up. You're waiting for at least a minute per person, it felt like. And then after you fail, then you got to go do the penalty. So you might be at that obstacle for 15 minutes. I mean, my lap where I failed two obstacles, I think during the night, my laps were like maybe like 110 to 115-ish on average. And that one lap was like 135 or something like that, maybe.
Yeah. And that's a big difference.
Yeah.
The grappler one, I have never got a chance to do it. I always thought it was kind of cool. But I get what you're saying with the backup. I did like, I think, and it was probably 2016, where didn't they have it on Everest? And you could pick like one side, you could go up Everest normal, or you could do the grappler when no one was there.
Oh, did they? I can't.
I think so. I remember seeing that somewhere.
We were just doing like the normal run up part of Everest, but I think maybe you're right. They had an option where you could do the grappler up it.
Yeah. Because
it's a cool obstacle, though. I like it.
I do too. It's very different. But when you say with the backup, I don't like backups. That can be frustrating, especially if, like you say, you end up waiting 15 minutes kind of deal.
And the other thing too is if you have like the obstacle bypass band, but I didn't realize this, you have to use it before you get to the obstacle. So I did my three tries, went up to the volunteer. And then I was like, I don't want to do the penalty. Can I just give you my band? And then he's like, nope, you know, once you attempt it, you got to go do the penalty. So I was like, oh no. So I had to go back down and then go around the penalty.
You know, good job on that volunteer. You know, they knew the rules and they slapped you around.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I like that.
You did exactly what it's supposed to do. I didn't realize that as soon as you attempt, you're committed.
Yeah, well, I have a theory that all you freaking top end elite people never read the rules. So, you know, we gotta stick it to you sometimes. So you went, like I said, so you went down there, you set up. Were you confident going in? Like you know, you wanted to go through the night. Did you think if you went all the way through that you would crack 100? You know, you've hit 100 before, but did you think you could crack it higher than 105? It was a good course for speed.
The course itself was good for speed. The obstacles itself weren't. There was a lot of very time consuming obstacles. Just like the barbed wire crawl took forever. There's another crawl that took quite a while. And I think time wise spent on obstacles was a lot higher at this course. But just the running and the course itself was pretty runnable. I think the lowest elevation gain they've had per 5 mile loop. So the first part of the course, everyone was flying. And then, as the obstacles opened up, it was quite a bit slower, I think, than other courses. I think in Vegas, I knocked out in like late in the race, close to a 1 hour lap. And here, I think there was no way I'd be able to knock out a 1 hour lap late in the game. But in terms of confidence going into the race, yes and no, I'd say it was the most, I mean, overall, I'd say it's the most confident I felt going into it, but also probably the least amount of ultra training that I've been doing. But just in terms of like mentality and just how durable and good my body felt, I felt confident from that perspective. But in terms of like my ultra running legs, I didn't really know. I hadn't done a ton of really long runs throughout the year. I did early in the year that big Grand Canyon run, and then throughout the summer, my longest runs were maybe like, had a few 10 to 15 mile runs, 20 to 25K. I was used to speaking to Americans, I guess, about running now. I did one like 3 hour run with some obstacles. At the military base, there's an obstacle course. So I was doing some loops on that. And I did 3 hours of that and felt really good. So I felt confident going in, but I mean, off 3 hours going into a 24 hour race, it's hard to say. I really didn't know how my legs were going to hold up in the back half of the race.
So clearly the key to winning World's Toughest Mudder is a lot of walking lunges, weighted pull-ups, and wall balls. That's
how really all that stuff really helped. Trying to do that lunge mile actually really helped.
How's that going anyway?
Good. I mean, I haven't done an official attempt. I just wanted to see how holding that pace would be. But yeah, that I think I'll do a crack, like an official crack at it. I was able to hold the pace at once for 15 minutes, and then it, like, my legs were definitely feeling like they're blowing up. So I don't know. It'd be close. I want to try.
What is it? So it's walking lunges for 1 mile, right?
Yeah, 1 mile walking lunges. You're allowed to put your hands on your knees for it, which you can go a little bit faster, but it still burns a lot. And yeah, the record was it's 22:50.
And is this like an official Guinness record? Do you think you can actually, like?
Yeah.
It still blows my mind that Guinness will do records like this and they won't recognize one for the Murph. I still don't get that one, but.
Or, oh, it's not in there? I mean, they have so many records in there, and some of them are.
And some of them are just wacky, right? Some of them are tough water tunnel loops. But it's, yeah, I'm surprised. I was so surprised they couldn't do it. But then again, it was Hunter that tried to get it done, and, you know, he probably just yelled and screamed at them and they didn't accept it.
Yeah.
But so with going to WTM, would you, like, I'm trying to feel like how this one clicked into you, because what was a surprise? You weren't surprised to do well. Were you surprised to win?
Oh, yeah, definitely surprised to win. I mean, I didn't really know who was all going to show up. I just went in with a simple goal of finishing strong and moving well the whole time. I wasn't looking at the leaderboard at all. It was just knocking out laps, trying to take as short a pit stop as I could, and just keep going, just keep moving and talking to people on course and having a good time. And I think it's a race where if you start thinking too much about the leaderboards and where you are, what position you're in, how far away you are from the lead, it's just, it wears on you mentally a lot. And I think that messes up with a lot of people's races. And if you're just only thinking about, if you just go in with, like, I just want to get as far as I can and push at the pace I feel like the entire time, you're gonna run your best race. And so that's what I was focused on. I didn't even know until like Chris Mendoza and DJ and Ian were like coming in helping crew for me, which was amazing. They were awesome. But then they started, as I come into pit, they were just telling me some things and where I was, and I was like half listening but half just like, okay, I don't want to think too much about that, I just want to keep going.
That's awesome. So when we talked before, your prime, you know, you were focused on trying to get in the elite 15, focused on a lot of stuff like that. And then you did this. Does your focus go back to that now, or where do you go from here?
Heck yeah, I set a goal to break 60 minutes in High Rocks. I'm still going to do that.
Well, you do have, as far as I know, you have the top Canadian time. So you have the top Canadian time. You won Grit Games, right? You won World's Toughest Mudder. This has been a pretty banner year for you. The only thing we didn't see is we didn't see you Spartan race this year.
No. Well, I did the 3K, the one 3K down in Pennsylvania.
You did the one 3K.
I was only, right. Yeah, I wanted to try the 3K out.
As a quick jump, what do you think about them bringing the Elite Series back next year?
It's not a 3K series?
Not a 3K. Okay. It's a three race series, one sprint, one super, one beast.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah. A little bit of logic.
I like it.
So for our Canadian one, they just announced it. You're going to be having Red Deer, Kelowna, and Tremblant.
Okay, awesome.
As part of the series. And then I think that ends up with, then there'll be like a North American championship, which I think will be in Seattle.
Okay.
All right. And then
nice. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a little bit different. It seems very logical. It seems very logical. So
I'm glad they're doing that. The 3K was really fun. I liked it more than I thought I would, but it didn't have quite the same feeling to the old series that Spartan did.
The 3K, the problem was they jammed it. They took everything else away and made it. If they had made it an add-on, I think it would have been good. Like, if they had taken it, it would have been what I would have liked to see. Don't put it Friday night for starters, because that's just a pain in the butt.
Yeah.
Make it Saturday after the regular races are done. Don't make it 3K. Make it one round of 1K qualifiers and then the top 15 race. Another 1K. Don't make them do 3K. Make them do another 1K. Because the qualifiers were the most exciting part.
Yeah.
everybody was close. The gap was there. If a mistake was made, you paid for it, that kind of thing. And you guys would still be fresh to, you know, you'd have enough jam to run it. You know, it wouldn't be so exhausting like that, that 3K, although it was only 3K, but when you were dealing with so many obstacles or crawls like that or whatever, it was exhausting. The 1K you guys could have flew.
Yeah, agreed. And don't make the barbed wire crawl like 30% of the race too.
Yeah. And take the stupid barbs off, for Christ's sake. Yeah. So what's the next event then?
Well, I want to go for another High Rocks. That's what I'm thinking. And also, after having finished World's Toughest, I might be going to the 8-hour race over in Saudi in February.
Nice. There's a lot of stuff with that to unpack. Like, the prize money is huge, right? Or so they say. Like, I'm not exactly sure the breakdown, but I'm hearing something along the lines of 50 grand for the winner or something like that, and a deeper pay. So it's just not like a winner take all. So it's hard to turn away, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they're announcing it soon, but I think it'll just be a lot of people coming together for that, like the biggest competition that OCR has seen in a while. So it's really exciting.
Me personally, from a fan perspective, I like the 8-hour.
I think so too. I think that's gonna be a really good distance.
I do. And I remember when they did the toughest before, the 8-hour night ones, those were cool. But I always thought like a regular 8-hour event. Now, I mean, obviously super endurance. And then, but afterwards, you're not quite obliterated. You could still have a party and you can still celebrate and you can still, you know what I mean? I like the 8-hour time.
Yeah, it's a good distance for sure. World's Toughest at the end, everyone's pretty much dead. And then if they do the whole celebration and everything the day after. But with 8-hour, you can still do something right after.
Yeah. Well, that'd be interesting. That'd be good to see. And there's a lot of big names going for that.
Yeah, seems like it. Sounds like everyone wants to be there. So,
well, it's good. One thing definitely is good is you brought the World's Toughest crown back to Canada. We haven't had it for a little while. So it's good to have it back. Where it belongs.
Yeah, Atkins and Lindsay were doing cool things over in Greece.
What did you think of that race? What do you think of I think the Trifecta one is one of the most interesting Spartan races going.
It seems like an amazing course, but I didn't see the coverage. I want to watch the coverage from it from this year, but I've watched a little bit from past years and it looks awesome.
So they only showed the beast this year. You can only see the beast, so it's just the one race. But the course looks great. For the most part, the coverage is very good. They get a couple of times where they, you know, lose signal as is such, but coverage is pretty good. It's different. It's interesting. It looks like a very big pomp and circumstance event. It looks like a destination race that you'd want to do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a bucket list race to go race in Sparta.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. That'd be pretty cool. What do you think about next year, Central Florida for World's Toughest Mudder? They haven't really said where. I have my thoughts as to where I think it's going to be.
Okay.
So they said Central Florida. Matt, OCR Obstacle Racing Media, reported Orlando area, which to me says Kissimmee, which is just a little bit west of Orlando, about 40 minutes outside of Orlando. But Tough Mudder had events there quite often. And so it makes sense to me they'd go back there. And it was, but if they do it there, I did a Tough Mudder there once and it was the flattest Tough Mudder I ever did.
Oh, really?
And it was funny because I did it right after coming off doing one at Mount St. Louis. So the difference was quite nice. I'm like, oh, this is really easy.
It's and most likely going to be warm overnight, but I mean, you never know sometimes.
I think you're pretty solid.
Yeah. And when it's warm like that overnight, that makes a big difference. This past one, I ran I ran the entire event just in shorts. I didn't have to put any neoprene on for my legs. And then I just had mostly wore just a windproof jacket. And then like maybe in the middle of the night, I put on a neoprene top and then a jacket on top of that. And I was comfortable.
Yeah. I heard a lot of people say that the weather was pretty good this year. I mean, I know there were still some people who got really cold. It always happens. I got cold in the desert. It, you know, it is what it is. But this was, the weather when this one looked nice. And hats off to OCR Report. They did a really good job on the coverage. I mean, as well as you can cover an event like that, they did a great job. And it was good to see. Francesca, that girl, I think she's probably the best commentator in OCR. I don't like, she just goes. They did a great job. So
fantastic. It's not easy to cover a 24 hour event. So yeah, hats off to them.
No, and I'm even wearing my obstacle running adventure shirt right now here. So that's there we go.
Nice.
part of their jam. So love you it. Say Hyrox is next. Sadly, we will not see you at DECA and DECA Worlds in Dallas. I was hoping you were going to go that one, but
yeah, I would have liked to go, but I only get to try out DECA Strong. That was the only event I got to do. So I would have liked to do a mile or DECA Fit, but just didn't get the chance to. So hopefully, maybe next year.
Yeah. There's lots of them, and I think you know more and more we're getting around here, so the events happen more and more. It'll be a lot of fun. So
you'll be there, right?
Yeah, we'll be there. I got four awesome races in, so which honestly I'm thinking is a little much for me. I'm normally a one and done kind of guy, but be doing fit relay, mile relay. But
it's over 3 days, right?
Yeah, it's over 3 days. So
oh, you'll be good.
Yeah,
fit, and you were running around rabbiting too, doing coverage.
Yeah, exactly. So I will be rabbiting this time, but I have kind of a different strategy. I'm not chasing. I'm gonna like. We're going to rock.
You're not going to run laps with people?
Well, come on. We're going to rock the corners. But yeah, we got the fit relay, the mile relay. So Bethany and I are doing the mile relay together. Then I have my age group strong. And then Bethany and I as well are doing the strong relay. And then my fit I'm doing with Jeff Fisher. So
that's awesome. That would be so fun. The team format for that looks really fun too. I'd like to try that one day.
The relays are so high paced. Like it is such redlined, especially... I want to say the mile. I want to say the mile, especially just you're redlined the whole time. You get maybe 30 seconds while your partner's doing their thing. And then you're just boom, all out. And then it's so much fun. It's so exciting. I can't wait.
I like the idea of hammering stations like that. Like doing like ski erg and row is like doing it at like the race pace is like feels kind of slowish, but like to actually do it in a relay format where you're hammering those, that seems really fun.
Well, when you were beside a guy like Mike Stankovic and he's you know hitting 117 on the ski erg for a little while,
about to pull the machine over.
Yeah, or you're beside Bubbles and he does a 17-second 25 cal and you're just like people are just hauling, the machines are shaking, they're going so bad, but but yeah, I'm looking forward because I mean we've seen the fit, we've done lots of fit relays with you know big groups of people. But we've never got a chance to see like a mile relay or a strong relay where you got 10 teams going at once. And I think that's going to be really something to see. I think that'll be a lot of fun.
Oh, that's awesome. I'll definitely tune in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, like I said, next event, you're probably looking at Hyrox. You're going for something like that. Are you set to, like I said, do you have one plan where you're going to try to qualify for one of the majors? Because I assume that's the goal. Get into one. Get a time that qualifies you for the majors.
Yeah. Well, main goal is go sub 60. Getting the major would be an awesome bonus. I mean, I'm going to shoot for that. Why not? But if I don't get into the major, I'm looking at they announced a GORUCK division event for it. They're going to do a championship in March. And that looks really fun. I want to try that.
What you should do is do the GORUCK team division with you and Jarrett Newby.
Whoa, that would be amazing.
Good record setting time right there.
Wait, for Hyrox, you have to run with that guy too. So I have to run with him.
Yeah, we wouldn't get straight off. He's a pretty good runner too.
That seems miserable now. No, that'd be fun.
I think that'd be good. That'd be something to see. Yeah, so hopefully you get in there. What do you think about the qualifying system there? Because quite frankly, right now, I think they have too many auto qualifiers. And that they should have had these majors just be open. So then all these cool people we were talking about that are going to be in like Hyrox this weekend that are in a pro wave, they would have had their shot to qualify for Worlds.
Right. And it seems like most people that got in were people from that had set times already from last year. And it seems like basically nobody is qualifying this year. Well, Ryland just got in, but I think Ryland might be the only guy that.
Only qualified. Guy. And then Camilla Massa is like the only woman.
Yeah, and so they've definitely seemed to more standardize the courses, but more towards the longer end this year. so course time seems like, which is good, they're getting more consistent, but Yeah, it's definitely harder to get into to Elite 15.
Yeah. I hope next year that they, I mean, this year I thought was a step in the right direction. I hope next year they take another similar step in the right direction. Because I think eventually I would like just like to see people at majors be open. Anybody, let's just say anybody for men who's run a sub 65 can be in it. Anybody for women who's run a sub 70 can be in it. And then all those people go to the major, top three get into Worlds. And then five different majors, top three at each one, or the roll down, whatever it is. And then simple, easy, fair.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah. But this first major looks like it's going to be awesome. And after having done a few of these Hyroxes and raced with some of the guys that are in there, and I'm excited to see everything go down.
Well, I looked at it and I see, I mean, you for the women's, obviously Megan, Lauren, very much the favorites. Where does it go from there, though? The women's field is wide open after that.
Yeah.
Because you got like Vivian, you've got Tara, you've got Alondra, you've got, like, there's a lot of great names that are going to be there for that.
Yeah, you definitely have those two more towards the top. And then, yeah, it'd be so hard to predict where everything else lands. And for the guys field, there's so many strong dudes that, like, it seems fairly wide open. Like, it could be, I'm excited to see.
Well, you would think audit, like, realistically, you'd say, okay, Kent and Rokovic are probably the favorites. But last year in Chicago, Kent and Rokovic, neither one of them did very well. I shouldn't say neither one did very well, but neither one was on the podium.
Yeah.
And it could very well, you could have a thing like those two could be the favorite, but you could have like a Megita, slip in a win again, Dylan Scott, Jonathan Wynn, like a lot of good runners coming over. And like I said, it's probably wide open. I wouldn't be surprised if almost anybody in that race won, or at least ended up on the podium. Even Rich Ryan, right? Rich Ryan just sneaks in on, what is it, who's seated like number 23. Somewhere around there, and he's getting in. If he was to podium, would it really be that big a surprise? I don't think so.
Yeah, I think, I mean, there's so many factors in this kind of race that makes it really exciting. But I think it's going to be interesting at the sleds, just with the excitement of the first major. I think some people are going to just go a little hot in the first sled, and it'll be really interesting after that.
Oh yeah. And I think that I think probably the smart people will be the ones who back off a little bit and just take that break that, you know, like go halfway, take a little break all the way across, take a little break. Or the ones I think that break it up and don't get too caught up in taking the lead at that time is going to pay off.
Yeah. It's going to be a mix of some people that got through the sleds a little bit too fast and they're hanging on for dear life for the rest of the race. And then a bunch of hunters coming from behind chasing them down.
Well, and we do have to shout out Maria Fetchik, who is the first Canadian to get to race in one of these top 15 majors. So
that's awesome. She was over in Spain. I think,
yes, she was.
I was qualified there.
Super nice person. She deserves it. Running really well and getting better every time. So
that's awesome. I'm pumped. I'm going to be rooting for her for sure.
All right, man. So anything else you want to talk about? World's Toughest Mudder, or your experience there, how you felt?
Man, it's just overall an amazing experience. As always, I love that event. Even though I'm beat up, I'm already thinking about going back and doing it again next year. But yeah, even just like thinking about doing a wall ball right now makes my legs hurt, but I'm sure I'll be back doing them again soon.
All right. And this is the classic question you got to ask every World Toughest Mudder champion. Tips for anyone going to do their first one in 2024.
Ooh. Oh man. There's so many. I'd say the biggest thing is get out on some long runs, but test out your nutrition, find out really what you want to eat. Cause I think a lot of people's races it falls apart with poor nutrition and their body's just not used to handling things that they eat. That's how my race went last year. I didn't have the best nutrition plan. So yeah, definitely figure that out. And that's going to make a huge difference in your race. And talk to people on course too, like reach out, encourage others. That's honestly, like, I think Atkins made a post about that, how doing that will give you superpowers. And I 100% agree. And yeah, just taking the whole experience. It's amazing.
Atkins gave me great advice before when I did world stuff as a mother too. And he told me, your biggest enemy is chafe nipples. Avoid the chafe nipples.
Yeah. I had some bad chafing last year. This year I did not have any. It was great. Switched over to the, what is it? The squirrel's nut butter stuff instead of
Nut
body
butter,
glide.
yeah.
Seemed to work great.
Awesome. All right. Talk to people, use nut butter, and you'll have a great WTM. Austin, thanks,
go.
Man. It's so good to see you. And again, congratulations. Blown away. Absolutely amazing accomplishment. 105 miles. Great job.
Cheers. Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you again.
You too.